Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. It's 524, I guess. It's the end of the month.
524. Yeah, next week we're going to have Memorial Day coming up next Monday. Markets are closed. You doing anything?
I'm not doing anything. No, I'm going to start wearing, I get to wear linen again.
Oh, and white, are you one of those that wait till Memorial Day for whites?
I don't remember the rule.
I think it was.
I know there's some point in the year you can't wear linens. Linen sport coat. I have a linen sport coat that's ritzy.
So you can't wear it till after post Memorial Day.
You have to. I don't even know what the rules are, but I think this Sunday you can start wearing it.
I remember my father used to get out his white patent leather shoes after Memorial Day, and then you have to put them away on Labor Day or something like that.
Yeah, Labor Day. That's when you're supposed to stop wearing something. Now that's a Florida tradition, though, isn't that patent white?
Well,
patent
no, that, New York. That was New York. He would take out his white pants and his white patent leather. You know, his white back in the day.
But he must have looked very dapper.
Oh yeah, that was the look. That was looking good. But the problem was that everybody did the same thing. So everybody's looking like an idiot. Everybody's walking around with white shoes and white pants on. You know, the day after Memorial Day, we're going to be having a Louisiana crawfish ball.
Okay.
So we're going to be getting 60 pounds of crawfish in.
Yeah, and a couple gallons of crystal.
Crystal?
Don't you use crystal?
What's crystal?
Crystal's the Louisiana hot sauce.
Oh, yes. But we're going to be, I got the, actually it's sitting right, I just got it in today. The famous place, they have the liquid crawfish boil, which is very, very potent. But I bought it for, the small size were like $12. So I got a gallon of it for $22 on Amazon. And you add this to after you put all all the stuff in the pot and the corn and the crawfish, you put some of this in, maybe a couple of capfills, but you let it sit because this infuses the crawfish with the hot stuff. But we're going to make it that way. We're going to make it with garlic butter, and we're going to make it with Chengdu style, Chinese style, with a brown chili sauce.
You're going to have corn on the cob?
Corn on the cob. I'm also going to be smoking up some St. Louis ribs and then putting a like a Carolina sauce on them and finish them on the grill. Maybe a pork butt. Going to have a good old time. Lots of beers and all that good stuff.
What's a Carolina sauce to you?
Carolina sauce is it's a mustardy sauce.
It's a South Carolina sauce.
Yeah. Kind of like a barbecue sauce that's yellowish.
Okay.
Right? What is a Carolina sauce to you?
Well, when you say Carolina sauce, I immediately think of North Carolina, which is a vinegar-based sauce.
Yeah. It's kind of a mustardy. Well, it has a little bit of vinegar in there.
Yeah. No, the mustard, the South Carolina sauce, we can talk about this for a long time. We're going to stop shortly. But the South Carolina sauce is like the North Carolina sauce, only is kind of mustardy. They got mustard in it. They do not put mustard in it down the other state.
Ah, gotcha. I gotcha. Well, let's talk about markets because that's what people are here for. Although they do like our little conversations and sidebars.
The banters.
Yeah, they like that. Especially when we're all cranky. But there was a big day on Wall Street today. Dow Jones was up over 200 points. You know, they say never short a dull market. The markets have been anything but exciting the last couple of weeks. As a matter of fact, I think last Thursday, Friday, and maybe even yesterday, I was saying that, you know, it's like watching paint dry. I mean, the market's just doing nothing. Then they go up a little, down a little bit. And I'm not talking about from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. I'm talking like in the 10-minute increments. Nothing was going on. And today, don't ask me why, but the S&P was up big time. NASDAQ was up big time. No news to explain except for the fact it was Tuesday. And we've seen this recently. We've seen the last 10 sessions of the markets, there's been a reversal each day. One day up, one day down. One day up, one day down. And almost equivalent. Whereas we saw last week, whatever day it was, and we talked about this, but there was a move up 1%. The next day it was down 1%. Then you had a small move, maybe down 20 basis points, then up 20 basis points. Every other day it's been up or down. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
Down.
Yeah, possibly, but I don't know if it's going to retrace the 1.25% that we saw today on the S&P or the 2% we saw on the NASDAQ in small caps. Big day. Some of it's because of volumes are light. We're going into a holiday season. We're going into summer. Summer doldrums of the markets. But what we're also going to see right now, and it's going to help the markets, this is kind of a traditional part of, this is kind of like Memorial Day, get out the white patent leather. Memorial Day for markets is, let's get out the rumors about merger and acquisition activity, M&A, and sell side is going to upgrade on all sorts of names because there's nothing else to keep the markets usually going in the summertime.
Isn't this sell in May go away?
That's what they say. So far, that's been kind of right. So, you know, it's been a flat month. Nothing really good. Seeing that, we're seeing that there's the continued slowdown in China. We saw that the U.S., actually, the housing numbers look really good. Today, the new home sales were fantastic. They beat, I think, almost by 100,000. I mean, they were like 17% higher than expected.
Yeah, it was pretty astonishing.
Yeah. I think possibly it's because there is this concern of a rate hike somewhere in the back of people's minds. And they're thinking, you know what? If it's a rate hike, I need to maybe close the deal already. Get this done. I don't want to have my mortgage, you know, because people think rate hike, they're going to start really hiking rates and my mortgage is going to go up and maybe it's going to be less affordable in the future. So why not just lock it in right now and get it done? To some extent. Existing home sales also were much better.
Well, I would hope.
Yeah. Now, Uber announced a leasing program this week. Did you see this?
No, I didn't see anything about this.
So somebody sent me a text and says, look at this. And it was, so I looked at the first part of it and it said, get a car under the new Uber leasing program for $250. That's what it said, $250. I'm thinking, $250, that's pretty cheap for a car. What kind of car? What are we doing? Now you have to click and find out more, of course. Now there's a bunch of different cars. There's some older ones and used ones and some new ones. But when you look into it, it's approximately, they do this per week, $116 to $150 per week for about 150 weeks. So what is that, 3 years, right?
Yeah.
But 150.
Well, no, 150 weeks?
Yeah, 3 years.
Yeah, right, three years. Yeah.
So $150 per week is approximately $500 to $600 a month, depending on if it's the 116 or the 150, right?
Which is kind of a steep lease.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when they started with giving you a car for $250.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's like Radio Shack used to pull that stuff.
The costs of the car are deducted from your Uber earnings on a regular basis.
Oh, so you take out the lease and then you drive around and you don't get any money.
Right.
Huh.
And also there's some other things they take care of. I think the maintenance, there's a variety of other things they take care of that are all embedded inside of this.
Huh.
So what they're doing is, if you think about it, they're creating their own Uber driver market. For people maybe that don't have cars.
It could be.
And now what's going to happen is we have all these excess cars that will be either sold or going to be turned in maybe from other Uber drivers. And at least they're going to have a fleet now.
Could be a second tier.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
Well, I'm glad to see they're doing something because this whole thing seems to me to be on thin ice.
Really? Why?
The law, you know, this is, let's face reality. Let's stop and admit what we're dealing with here. This is gypsy cabs.
Oh, yeah.
The whole cab system in the bigger cities has been very elaborately set up to make government money and to sell medallions and do all these different things. And the only the fly in the ointment's always been the cars, the so-called cars, even though those have to be licensed too. These are gypsy cabs.
And what's the problem with that?
There's no problem as far as I'm concerned, but the governments don't like these things.
Well, the government doesn't like things that they can't get their greedy fingers on.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Regulate only for
and
the point
the
of regulation.
And they're the ones who run the show, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think it's on thin ice. I think at any moment, you know, luckily they've been hanging in there with their lobbyists and all the rest of it, but I don't know how long this is going to go on. I wouldn't be investing in any of these things.
Well, Toyota just invested a chunk of money today.
Who did?
Toyota. I believe it was Toyota.
In Uber?
Yep. I will look this up. I just saw this pass.
I think this has more to do with the auto driving cars than it does Uber.
They're doing it for the let's see here. I just saw this article pop up here. What Toyota? Yeah, Toyota. An undisclosed sum of in the ride-hailing company and establish a car leasing. Oh, they're doing car leasing also.
Oh, they're just going to be one of the companies leasing cars.
Right.
So they want to get in on the action. Okay.
This is after, do you think this is a response to Apple investing in Didi?
I don't know.
Didi in China. But everybody's wanting in on the action. I mean, this is a place where they could hopefully, you know, there's another place where they could rip off the consumer because it will look like it's, you know, part of a bigger play here. And you'll pay a lot more and you won't ask questions. You won't shop around a deal because Uber's got here's the price. Here's what it is. Uber's going to make a piece on it. The drivers will be left holding the bag if things don't work out. Now, what happens if all these guys rent or lease these cars from Uber? Let's for a moment say this is a very successful program, the leasing program. Okay, you got me?
Yeah.
And then, as you say, it's on thin ice. And all of a sudden, snap your fingers, Uber's done. Whether it's in a state, whether it's in a city, whether it's in the country. What happens to all these leases?
Wow, I don't know. It's a good question.
Something.
I think there's another moment of corruption here, if you think about it. If you're assigning area, I don't know how. Well, I'm gonna back off because I'm starting to talk. I'm ad-libbing. I don't want to do that.
You ad-lib?
I mean ad-lib in the sense that I don't know. I absolutely know nothing.
I gotcha. So it would be totally.
I ad-lib, sure, but just based on logic or something. There's no logic.
You're be talking there. Out of your ass. Yeah, this
talking
is
talking out of my ass. I'm not gonna do it.
Well, before we get to the next story, I sent something FedEx today to my daughter. Now, we don't use FedEx that much anymore because everything is
too expensive.
I didn't really know the expense because we use so much email and alternative methods for delivery, right? I mean, who uses FedEx anymore except for the fact when I get things? So I sent a small, very small package from Florida to New York City. I did all the, you know, I have a FedEx account, so we set up all the different thing, and I say, okay, let me calculate, what's the price of that for the standard overnight? From New York, from Florida to New York. Do you have any idea? Standard overnight.
It used to be like $8, $8 to $20, depending on how much it was.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
$51.
It's a jip.
$51.
Use the post office.
So I went on 2-day. I said, I'll go 2-day. You know, I went 2-day morning delivery, $27.
Priority mail, same thing.
$27.
Too high.
Yeah. Who's paying these prices?
I think people got sucked. This is like bait and switch.
Yeah.
I think they got sucked into it for years and years and years, and then they got accounts and for years and years and years, and the next thing you know, they still use it even though they haven't checked their bill recently.
Yeah, I don't know. $51, I was stunned. Absolutely stunned.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me in the least. Because I caught on to this over a year ago that they jacked the prices way up, and now it's like it's not usable.
I wonder
Use the post office. The overnight express mail is fantastic. A priority mail works great.
I wonder if the reason that the prices for you and I to use FedEx are so high is because Amazon and those companies that are doing shipping through them have got such lean deals, we have to make up the differential.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yep.
I know this for a fact. I was doing bringing in oil paintings from China and Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I would get a bundle of, let's say, 6, 7, 8 paintings from Vietnam, and they had to send them over TNT. And so it was TNT and some other things. They didn't have FedEx anything there. And so it was top dollar. And so you had to pay a lot of money to get these things over. FedEx, meanwhile, coming in out of China, it was like you could bring in like 100 pounds of stuff, and it was like $8,
yeah,
nine, nothing. $10.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because they had a sweet deal with all these Chinese vendors because they wanted to lock that market up. And they were giving away the shipping. I just found that distressing.
Yeah, well, they're obviously making money. The stock's at a relative high. I mean, they have competition, but I find it pretty amazing. And I do question how long that could possibly last at those levels. And God forbid prices go up for fuel. Venezuela.
Yeah, I'm sure they already factored that in.
So after last week, I had kind of thought that I'd like to look into this kombucha thing again.
Kombucha, yeah.
Kombucha. And all of a sudden, my son comes up to me and goes, "Hey, Dad, I'm watching this video. Check this out. I want to make this." I'm like, "Well, what is it?
Oh, God.
What is it? Let's see." I'm like, "Oh, what is that?" So we watched this video, and he says, "Yeah, it's supposed to be really good for you."
Uh-huh.
I'm like, "Okay."
Says who?
So this is how it's made, just to let you know. And I put a picture on DH Unplugged under the show notes to take a look at here, which is called a SCOBY pick. A SCOBY. A SCOBY stands for a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. It's like a catcher's mitt. Right? Look at the picture. You see the picture?
Yeah, I know what it looks like. It looks like. Sometimes like it looks worse. It has different looks.
And you just have of it, and then multiply.
It's a gob of crap. It's just a bunch of stuff growing together. It's like the mold growing on the side of an old abandoned bathroom where there's a lot of moisture. And you get the scum, and you can tear the scum off the wall, and then that's what you'd eat.
Yeah, it's like a plasticky, gooey.
Yeah,
it's like
what it is.
It's like a hardened jellyfish.
That's the mother.
And basically what you do is you use a piece of it because by the time the fermentation process is going, you use, in this particular video I was watching, you use sugar, caffeine, and a tea. And you put this and then you put the hot water in there and you kind of let it get to room temperature. You put the SCOBY in there. You put like a cloth over the top. Let it sit for 4 or 5 days as this thing is fermenting and getting all gnarly. And then the SCOBY is like double the size. Because obviously it kept growing and eating the nastiness.
You're feeding it. It's like have you ever seen the movie The Blob?
Yeah, that's what it is. That's exactly what this is. So anyway, you have to look at a picture. If you haven't seen this SCOBY and this kombucha, I think we have to go back to this whole idea of Reed, though, the stock, which we'll talk about during the stock picking time when we at the end of the show. There may be something in this little fad of people buying into this kombucha crap.
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things. First of all, this is not a new fad. This it may be a new fad in Florida. It may not have really maybe it doesn't have 100% market penetration. That's for sure. But this stuff showed up. I first remembered about 7 years ago.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And people were, this stuff's the unbelievable. It's delicious. It's a secret to the living forever. And I never liked it from the beginning. I did taste it once 7 years ago, and I didn't like the flavor of it. I thought it tasted funky. And then when I found out what it was made from and how you can't duplicate it, I mean, one culture changes to the next depending on all kinds of environmental things because it's just a mass of goo. I don't see why anybody would even touch this stuff with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. Pretty fascinating, though.
I think it's going to be a kill-off.
It's one of these things that it's like kale. You know, kale is horrible to eat.
Yeah, kale's the worst.
But now
it turns out you get kidney stones if you eat too much.
Really?
Oh, no, drinking kale juice give you kidney stones.
Oh, it's so gnarly. It's so bitter. It's so horrible. But, you know, it's like the worse it tastes and the more disgusting it is, the better it must be for you.
Yeah.
That's the whole thesis.
By the way, I will get a letter. So that thing about kidney stones is a myth. I'll get that note. But. Well.
I'm sure.
I think it makes sense because there's a lot of oxalic acid in that stuff. Not good for you.
Now here's a story that I think you'll find very interesting. It's a story about pharmaceutical companies and charities. Charities that are set up to pay for prescriptions. You probably have seen these. Pay for prescriptions for people that don't have enough money or the means to pay the high prices of these prescriptions. So you have a drug that maybe is for, I don't know, cancer or just pick whatever disease it may be. And let's say it costs, I don't know, $100,000 a year for the regimen. And, well, people don't have the money. So what do they do? Well, there's a variety of things you could do. You can ask for waivers of the company, maybe get the insurance company to pay for it. But you know what? There's also these charities out there that have been set up specifically to help people pay for medicines that they can't afford.
Yeah.
You've seen these, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're all over the place.
Are you aware that these are seeded by the pharmaceutical companies?
I don't know that for a fact until you just said it, but it doesn't surprise me in the least, and I would have expected it.
So the pharmaceutical companies get persuaded by these charities to put in all sorts of money, and they say, hey, listen, here's the deal. putting all this money into the charity, put $40 million into the charity, whatever. We got this guy putting in $30 million, whatever. And we are going to then help direct the payment of the various drugs into your company. Well, the company probably gets a tax deduction for the charitable donation, right?
Yeah.
Then they get the money back. It's like washing money.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Fascinating story. Yeah, I put a link up there.
A tax donation and they get the money back.
Yeah.
By the drugs.
Do that all day long, right? Just keep on going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
That's clever.
And also, it's possibly that the money will be used for another drug for another company. But again, if your drug becomes very popular and it becomes very, and the more expensive you make it, the less people can actually afford it, means that they'll have to go to the charity and get the money. So you're going to get the money from other companies that have put in money. Plus, of course, those suckers, I mean, donors that are also putting money in there because they, you know, want to make sure that there's money available for those people that can't afford it. Very scary. What's going on?
I just smashed something.
Hmm. Hopefully it was the envelope with the check in it to the charity.
Yeah. I'm very skeptical of some of these schemes.
Yeah. Well, you got to look at this. This is a very fascinating story that was published by Bloomberg. And there's a link over on the show notes of DH Unplugged on this. How Big Pharma uses charity programs to cover for drug price hikes. A $1 billion system which charitable giving is profitable. Kind of crazy, huh?
Wow.
Yeah.
These guys need to be taken to task.
Yeah, well, they have been a bit, but there's a lot more tasks to be taking, I guess. All right, so Takata. I was looking at this. You know, Takata is the company that makes one of the large companies that made the airbags.
Right.
And obviously a major recall. And I can't help but think about Takata. First of all, how they're still in business after 125 million airbags being recalled.
I'm baffled as much as you are.
Right. It's kind of like, it reminds me, seriously, of Fukushima, where the cover-up by the Japanese government with the nuclear meltdown. Remember, nothing's wrong. We got it under control.
Yeah, nothing's wrong. Fine. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. Right. A little leakage into the ocean, but don't worry. And then this is probably to this day still being covered up by them. But this is another Japanese company. And I don't know if it's the old thing where the Japanese have to maintain their honor, you know what I'm talking about, and save face, that they allow this to continue on and not tell the truth to the world of what's going on. But, you know, talk about taking somebody to task. I mean, it's 125 million airbags. There's about 1.25 billion cars out there in the world now, so about 10% of the ones that they're recalling. But every day there's another 6 million here, 2 million there. And not to mention the debt. Forget about just the cost to recall and then to somehow repair. We're talking about also the deaths that is caused and the lawsuits against them.
Yeah.
I just don't understand
it's
the whole
an
thing.
Absolute, it's a phenomenon. And since you bring it up, I'm always I wonder about, because we bring this up constantly with the Chinese. And, we can't believe their numbers. Yeah. God, they're lying. They lie to us. They're just a bunch of cheats. We have no idea if they're going up or down or whatever. You know, the company, is there anybody even at the place? There's all this sort of thing. But the Japanese are just as seem to be just like this.
The Japanese seem to be more calculating. They seem to be much more aware of the fact that, you know what? We don't care if we tell the truth or not. We're just going to make sure that we look good. Versus maybe. The Chinese are like manipulating and twisting of things. Maybe it's a fine
Chinese
line.
Chinese seem to be doing it out of fear.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm not going to make my numbers. Let me just lie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Now, speaking very about
hard to deal with these folks.
Overseas shenanigans. Seems that the Google's Paris office was swooped upon by French police and prosecutors in a tax fraud probe. They're being accused that they failed to pay its fair share across the European Union. Which is kind of
they've been accused of this for a while.
And the French are the ones that are in charge of this. Sacre bleu, Google, you don't pay. So what are you following this at all? You know anything about
No, I'm not following it at all.
Yeah, it's probably going to fade away into the nether as things do. Just like Bank of America today or yesterday, they announced that it was $1.5 billion, whatever the number was, some ridiculous number, that was a case against them that was due to the Countrywide acquisition, where the Countrywide was...
Yeah, scammers.
Yeah, I think they threw it out of court today.
They were busted for scamming the public.
But they threw it out of court today.
Was it completely thrown out? I thought it was just put into an appeal mode.
Well, maybe, or set aside. That's what was the word. Set aside and probably going to be appealed. Maybe it'd be appealed. But you wouldn't be surprised if they throw it out, right?
No, not in the least.
Right.
Exactly. Not at all.
Right. So it's not like it's, oh, wow, I can't believe that. I mean, even if we knew without a doubt that they're, well, remember something, they bought Countrywide. So they're accepting all the claims against them. So you don't know if the judge is going to be like, well, it's really not Bank of America's fault. They just had to accept all the stuff.
Bank of America has done plenty to make it sound like it is their fault.
Yeah.
They had a case out here where they had foreclosed on, this was about a year or a year and a half ago. They had foreclosed on some guy, and it was proceeding, and they were about to lock the house down, and the sheriff was coming in, all the rest of it. That they didn't even have a loan. The guy didn't have a loan at the Bank of America. He owned the place.
What was their problem?
They just thought they were going to scam the guy out of his house before he could stop him.
Oh, gosh. That's crazy.
They were trying to pull that stuff up in Washington State. In fact, we got we were part of that scam. And so they were trying to steal our house, Bank of America.
Really?
And so we immediately got a hold of the state attorney, and we became like a mole for the state.
Very nice. Paid us.
So we were just feeding them all this stuff. And then they back off and they come back. It was really very funny, but you know, we were working for the state.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the Bank of America just pulled out of the state of Washington. They dropped a bunch of their branches and they just have a few outlets or something now. The bank is horrible. I will not have an account with the Bank of America.
I have my accounts with them, a bunch of accounts with them, and I don't have any problems. I never walk into the branch. I don't have any dealings with anybody. We use mobile apps or online.
Yet.
Or that's it. Yet?
Yet.
Until they try to take my podcasting rig here or something?
I don't know. They usually go for a bigger game than that.
Well, what's your take on the markets? Let's do that before we get to the closest to the pin update here. Is this a topping pattern, a consolidation?
Let's look at the chart
up there of the S&P 500 back to the beginning of 2015. Where we initially saw that kind of rise into July, kind of that slow, steady couple of downstrokes here and there into July, and then that big drop, and then that big move up, and then a kind of a layover again, and then a big drop again. It kind of looks like when we see this rounding, see that rounding of the tops there?
I'm also looking at the second dip was deeper than the first.
Correct.
Which is, maybe means a bottom, or it means the beginning of the end.
Which is not necessarily the case right here, because you have lower lows, but there's been a couple of, if you want to combine that low area between August and October, and then the next low, which was in February, we'll call it, that was a lower low, and then the highs, we have lower highs. So the highs in July.
Right. That's a good point, too. Yeah.
You know, but
there's one high and then another high, which was lower, and then another high, which was lower. And these highs came off a pretty good move.
I mean, there wasn't V's in this case because they're W's now, right? They look like W's.
Right.
Where you have one drop, then it pulls up, and then it comes about a third of the way back up, and then it drops down again, and then you're just off to the races in like a day, which is the same thing that happened here. We dropped, and then a couple of days, and then it just flew higher, you know, retraced back from 1840, 30, up to like 1950 in a matter of a week.
Yeah.
And then we just keep on going with the momentum. And now we see this big turnaround, big rounding again, and a lot of slopes and a lot of things. I mean, you know, from all I can see fundamentally, it looks to me as if it is a topping pattern. That doesn't mean we're going to see a big correction necessarily, whatever. I mean, I just don't see, and I may be wrong about this, I just don't see the elements here that are able to provide for new highs, especially with the dollar coming up a bit, earnings coming down, and the world just not really in a great place overall. I just don't see all of the components together. Now, that doesn't mean it won't happen, but you know, because we do see that a lot of times emotions and investor sentiment swings pretty hard in various directions.
But, well, I'm thinking,
yeah,
I'm thinking that nothing will be resolved, and even though I think I don't get why this would be such a big deal, but I guess it is. Well, I do get why it's such a big deal, because it is. The Brexit vote.
You think the Brexit vote is more important than the election in the U.S.?
Yeah. Well, I think short term, yeah, for sure.
And when is this? June what?
It's June 23rd or something. It's June something.
And you think that the...
I think the world's looking at this.
Do you think what... my opinion is, just like everything, nothing will change. Nothing ever changes, it seems. You know,
well, I don't think they're going to vote to leave the EU.
Right, that's what I mean.
So I think they're too skittish. The British public's too skittish. They've already been badgered into going along with the program, and which is a European dictatorship. Hello.
Uh-huh.
And so that will, once that's removed, I think we get to see a pattern that's a little more easy to figure out.
But until we get closer and closer to November, and dependent on...
Oh, yeah. Well, that's... Yeah. Yeah.
That's the other thing that could, you know, kind of foul things up, right?
Yeah. We can also have a crash before the election. That would be interesting.
I can't imagine, first of all, and I'm not saying this from a political standpoint of whether I like this person or not, but with the current mouthpiece that is on with Donald Trump, it can't be good for markets from all the things he's talking about.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll be, I think, again, we're going to see just what you said. Nothing's going to change. What's going to happen is there'll be, everyone will kind of rationalize whatever it is he's up to or whatever he's saying, and then they'll like swallow and go back to business as usual.
Yeah. Business as usual.
But I still think this Brexit short term is what's causing these weird patterns.
Could be. Definitely.
Because it would make sense that the international market is, you know, kind of flaky, and it's the other ones, and a lot of big investors everywhere.
Well, one of the news items today that I thought initially got things going to the upside in the European markets before the markets opened here was that the Schauble of Germany said that there will be no write-downs of Greek debt prior to 2018. There was some discussion about them renewing their austerity and increasing austerity again in Greece, which I can't believe they're going along with this again after they were so deliberate about not going along with it and getting more bailout monies. And it seems now that there was going to be the potential for some write-downs, but today there was a, hey, you know what? We're not doing any write-downs till after 2018. There's no talk of it. There's no discussion of it. That was, I guess, because, you know, Germany doesn't want to take any write-downs.
Was that just to take it off the table?
I think it was so that it appeased the Germans in that the amount of money that they would put in. And also, if there was a write-down, why would Germany, which is a big part of providing the monies for any further bailouts, why would they want to... The public would be just absolutely apoplectic if there was a write-down in the near future and there was a new bailout that was just given to them. I mean, you know, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
That would be bad.
Yeah. You know, we're going to write down our stuff in by 50%, but give you another $50 billion. I think the German people would be just up in arms. Not to mention all the problem with the refugees they're having and all of that, and their economy's not in great shape. So, all right, let's take a look at the, real quickly, DH Unplugged. We have one more week to go to announce a winner of the Closest to the Pin for Intel. This is a game that we play with our audience and our listeners. It's a listener participation program where we pick a stock and you get a time to put in a price target on a specific date that we choose that you think that would be for that stock. Whoever's closest or closest to the pin is the winner. And you get shirts and maybe some books and some cool sunglasses and different things that we have. Now, this one, John had said, why don't we have one that's not a weekly, but a little bit longer? Maybe there'll be some more skill involved, right?
Yes, that would be the idea.
So we picked Intel, which didn't have a lot of movement and all. And let's see where we are here. This is also available on DH Unplugged. We have about, I don't know, 80 or 90, maybe 100, well, maybe 100 people, 10, 20, 30, 40, maybe more than 100, maybe 140 people that are guessing. We opened the entries on April 29th. They were closed on May 10th. And the final price date is $5.27, this Friday coming up. Now, the average price of the entries from all of the listeners is $29.72. My guess is $29.78, which is kind of interesting. Your guess is $28.25. The current price is $31.06, which means that you're 9% away. I'm 4% away. But as of right now, as of the close of business today, Chris B. is the closest 2 cents away from the actual price, 0.06%. Matthew P. Matthew was a winner previously, now that I think about it.
Oh, Matthew may be one of those guys.
Yeah. Hmm. Then we got Shane W. is very close.
Momentum player.
Yeah. Or maybe a
price rigger.
Yeah, what's the word?
Fixer.
Somebody get a fortune teller, a soothsayer, future seer.
Yeah, no, there's no such thing.
We have Amanda R. and Tanya W., who is, I know Tanya and you go back and forth on Twitter a bunch, right?
Ah, yes.
Yeah,
she's in New York City.
Is that where she is? Hello, Tanya. Yeah. People like when they hear the name on the show, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they love it.
Yeah. So Tanya's 0.19% away from that. So that's a pretty good
Well, these are all optimists.
Yeah. Well, let's see. We have the furthest away. You want to do
but
that?
By the way, I should mention, we got just enough time left. You know, one tech company comes in and says, I think we're going to not sell so many chips this year. And the whole sector goes boom all at mm-hmm. once. And that will bring Intel back down into line.
Yeah. It was right there. It was after the last earnings. It was holding right at 30. I think it cut right underneath. But I will tell you, talk about those are the optimists. The pessimist in the group looks to be Robert E. His price target is 28% away, but he's on the low side. He's looking at 22.15.
He came in at 22?
Yeah, 22.15.
No, that's way off. You can't. That's too. You're getting carried away.
Yeah, we got some people at 12, 26. I was actually 26, pushing it. 26. We got some people at 33s. That's good. Let's see if the high side, furthest away, 39, Hortitude. Somebody's name is Hortitude, I think. Hortitude H. Yeah. $39.
Yeah, my advice is go play options. Get carried away.
Yep. All right.
$100
to the winner. All right, let's take another look at something also. Something we really recently instituted was the new old codgers versus millennials thematic ETF challenge. And in this portfolio that we created with companies like DaVita, Tootsie Roll, McDonald's, Goldman Sachs, Altria, this is a fun thing. So we're looking at how do the old line companies do against these companies that are quote unquote going to do well because of
millennials
like Facebook, yes. LinkedIn, Amazon, all that. Let's see here. I know that as of today, my last look, I think the global millennials since inception is flat. And I think that the DH Old Codger Index portfolio is down about 0.5%. Now, the old codgers were leading for a while there.
Yeah.
And then just kind of slipped a little bit. I think because Sears came out with some numbers and a couple of other companies didn't do so well. But today was a good day, actually, up about 1.5%. That's good.
All right.
Housing market, we talked about that earlier. Questioning whether or not it's very, very doing very well right now because of what I would call something I am now calling, as of yesterday, I thought this up, Fed winds.
That's a beauty.
You like that one, right?
Oh, yes.
I thought of it. I liked it. The Fed winds. Like, you know, you have headwinds, you have tailwinds, we have Fed winds.
Yeah, someone's going to steal that from you.
Really? Can we copyright it? All right, somehow we're copywriting this right now on the air for all of you, and we're trademarking it at the same time. Fed winds, TM. The use of any part of this, especially the word Fed winds, is prohibited by law. So Fed wins, which is this whole idea that not only the Fed here in the United States, the central bank and Yellen and her crew, who have been talking up a rate hike, but also around the world with their negative interest rates and all the things that they're doing, is a question of whether or not some of the movement is causing people to get off their keister. Now, I've argued for years that the Fed should actually raise rates because, or threaten to raise rates because it would get people moving. If you don't do anything and you keep stuff down and you say, we're not changing rates for an extended period of time, nobody's in a hurry. If I was to tell you, John, I got this widget for sale and I know it's something you like, it's something you'd want, you're going to want to buy one day. It's $2. And you say, yeah, you don't need one right now, but it's $2. And you know what? I'm just letting you know, I don't think I'm going to be changing that price for the next 5 years. Well, you're not going to be in a big hurry to buy that, right? But if I say to you,
unless I actually needed it.
Right, if you needed it. Yeah. But if I said to you, you know, just to let you know, over the next little while here, we're going to start raising the price of that. I'm not exactly sure how much, but we potentially could raise it to, you know, $2.25, $2.50, $3. You know, it could even go up much quicker. We're not quite sure. Well, you may be thinking, you know what, maybe I'll get those at those low rates right now. So the whole way, which seems a bit opposite of the way inflationary pressures could start to move, as opposed to just keeping rates low for a long time and letting an economy hopefully overheat, is to prompt people, push them off the fence, get them doing something.
Yeah, that's one thesis I've heard.
I like it. Along with Fed wins.
Maybe.
Egypt Air, do we want to talk about this?
What are we going to talk about?
What's the story? Is it a bomb? Is it a fire? Is it a bomb fire? Is it a? Is
they're still they're when they find the black box or whatever they're looking for.
They still can't find that.
Yeah, they'll. I think they may have a shot at it. They know where the range is, and they just need to send some devices down there to grab them.
Do you think that if it was terrorism, that possibly they wouldn't tell anybody? Keep that hush.
Could be. I don't know what they do. I mean, sometimes you think they tell people there was terrorism when there's no terrorism.
Oh.
I think there's been examples of that.
Well, the Saudi press said that today. Saudi press said that the U.S. blew up the World Trade Center to create war on terror.
And that was a couple of days ago, I think.
Yes,
that's what they said. They're doing that because we're threatening to release the 28 pages. Showing their complicity in the trade centers going down.
Yeah, and they're saying it wasn't them, it was us.
Yeah.
That's a good way to try to change it up.
Well, you know, give it a shot.
Yeah. I'm rubbing your glue. That kind of thing. Twitter is updating its 140 characters again. Now they took out the URLs and the pictures. That didn't count anymore. And by the way, somebody gave me a good idea. Instead of just writing a long word, .com, you put underscores. We talked about that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now they're taking out the ampersand name or the handle. If I said at the real Dvorak.
Oh, that's good because that's unfair.
Yeah. So they took that out.
Because some people have really long names and you lose characters talking to them.
Mm-hmm. So now you can take that out. Now they're also adding additional features like retweeting yourself.
What?
You can retweet yourself.
Why would you want to retweet yourself?
Well, there is something I thought about. This is kind of a good thing because maybe you wrote something and maybe what you want to do is add a little point on it so you can quote your tweet and retweet yourself. So let's say I say, DHM Plugs was great tonight and put the URL, maybe a link to the thing. And then I might want to tweet it and say, at Dvorak, did you see this? I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. No, I understand what you're saying because you can add that little comment to a retweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you know how you put the dot at and the handle at the beginning of a tweet and that will then do a thing where it's your people and the other person's people and a much bigger audience?
Right.
Versus if you only put the handle, at handle, what happens is it's only the people that you share a...
Right, it goes to a lesser or smaller audience.
They're doing away with that.
Why?
They're doing away with the dot at convention. Because
doing away with you're cheating on it, you mean?
Well, somebody had to create that. It's not like, you know, it's not like that was, it's obviously something that's built into the system to know there's a dot.
No, I'll tell you what it is. It's nothing built into the system as an actual scheme. The dot was like having a if I send you a tweet and I start it with at Andrew Horowitz,
right.
And it pretty much goes just between you and me, even though everyone can see it if they're following you or me,
mm-hmm.
but not, you know, everyone, it's confusing, but it doesn't have as much of an impact.
Right.
If I put the dot in front, then it looks like one of my tweets and all my followers will know about it. And it goes to a broader audience sometimes if you have anybody that follows you. But that was like saying, hey, Andrew, at Horowitz. It's like if I used H-E-Y and then your thing, that's like the dot.
Right.
So what it was just the dot. It was just offsetting the at name, which means that it wasn't going to be just like a response to your something you said.
Well, now, I guess.
Too confusing, but I understand the mechanism.
So now what they're doing is, I guess if you put the handle in the beginning, it will act like the dot now.
I don't know if that's a benefit or not.
No, it says if you want. You know, let me just read this for a second. Just hold on. Hold the horses on that. It means you'll no longer have to use the dot, which people currently use to broadcast. If you want a reply to be seen by all your followers, you will be able to retweet it to signal that you intend for it to be viewed more broadly. Now they're making it more confusing. It's probably why the stock was down another 2.5% today. On this, you know,
keep it simple, stupid.
Yep, and keep it stupid simple. But anyway, this, and by the way, they finished off this little blog post about this that's going to be implemented over the next several months. Big question: what here has to be implemented over several months? What would take that long to implement? Right.
Nothing.
Which goes to the point of, sheesh, you know, I mean, Twitter just can't get it going. All right, next. This is kind of interesting. I'm sure you saw this. But there's been a study that shows that Fitbit trackers may not be calculating heart rates correctly.
Oh.
Seems that your heart rate can be about 10% or off, or about, they say 14 beats per minute when exercising in high levels. So if you're trying to reach a target of, I'm picking a number, 150 beats per minute while you're doing extreme exercise, you may be actually at 164, which now is concerning people that, man, you could be blowing yourself out here.
Yeah, yeah. They could sue the company.
People dropping dead of a heart attack because they thought that they were not doing enough and trying to bring it back a bit higher. Now, this question has been raised not only about Fitbit, but all the other trackers as well. Because, you know, maybe they're not accurately maybe pressing on a particular, you know, artery or vein or whatever it is.
Oh, I'm sure they're not.
Yeah.
There's a little gimmicky little toys.
Yep. So Fitbit was down pretty good on that. That, first of all, I'm not exactly sure what, I mean, I get how people who are exercising want to understand their heart rate and all that good stuff. Let me just say something. In the old days, we didn't have all this fancy gear for fishing. People used a line, they put a hook on it, and they pulled up a fish. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, they used to use a worm.
Right. In the old days, you didn't need all this stuff to figure out how long you were sleeping. Because you know how long you slept? From the time you slept to the time you woke up. That's how long you slept. And what was your heart rate? It didn't matter. You went for a run. How long did you run? Till you freaking were tired as hell. And you're sweating like a pig. And then you had some good exercise. It wasn't that I needed somebody else to tell me all these things. What is happening with the world?
I wonder about that myself, but I think a lot of it has to do with this kind of idle fascination. My wife, for example, when we went to New York, Mimi and actually Jay, the daughter, we both went, or they both had these Fitbits on. And then we'd go all over the place, you know. I ended up getting a callus on my toe, I just realized, or my foot. But anyway, we roamed all over the place. We went to museums. We did this. We did that. And then at the end of the day, when we got home to figure out to go to dinner, they both report on how many miles we walked.
How many steps.
And how many, and they calculated the miles, and how many steps we took.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, we walk good. Typically, but I thought it was kind of interesting. We walk 6 miles a day,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, pretty standard New York stuff. And I don't know how many steps we took, or steps, or stairways, apparently stair steps.
Why don't we want to know how many breaths we took a day? I mean, why is that not something that's important to know also?
I don't know.
How many times I blinked my eyes during the... Did you know that today I blinked my eyes 642 times?
Is that all?
I don't know. I'm just saying, why isn't it... Why do we not... Why are these things that we don't feel were necessary to track, but we have to track how many steps I take? Who cares? Who cares that I walk...
It's kind of interesting to know you walk 6 miles.
Okay, that's great. Okay, so now you know it once. So you kind of get a...
You don't know it. You don't need to know it again. Because it's always going to be the same.
Right. I go to New York, I go anywhere from 4 to 6 miles a day or so. I only slept 6 hours last night. I'm tired. Are you tired because you only slept?
So you're recommending we short all this stuff, but I think people are all into it.
They are into... Well, look at the stock. It's crap. Oh, Fitbit's just obliterated.
Yeah, but I think it's a buy.
All right.
Not now, not this minute. I'm just saying, I think long term.
I think
all these companies that are doing this wearable crap, I like Fitbit the best.
I mean, I like it. Obviously, you have to somehow like Apple also for their particular watch and all. A lot of competition in this area. You have this copper thing that is on TV all the time now, the Copper Fit, which is, you know, it tells you like one thing for like $30. You have some of the cheap ones like Xiaomi has a $15 bracelet and more expensive ones as well.
Some people are wearing 3 and 4 of these things.
Really?
Yeah.
What? Why? Why?
Because some of them do different things.
Oh. Okay.
You're all wired up. You must have stick a probe in your nose.
People are so fascinated with themselves.
It's like contemplation of the navel. That's the selfie. It's the era of the selfie. Come on.
It's me. There's enough discussion about
selfie,
me. Let's talk
selfie,
about
selfie.
Yeah.
I think you should go. This would be a good one. Dream of some phony baloney ones and then try to promote them as though they're real. And have one of them so it's like a probe up your nose. And it has like a little knob at the end with numbers flashing on it.
I want the one that it's glasses that you wear that has like an alligator clip on the glasses area that you attach to the top of your eyelid. Okay? That will count your eye blinks throughout the day. John, you won't believe this. I had 20% more eye blinks on my right eye than my left eye today.
And you could have some sort of new theory about eye blinks and health.
Yeah. Those that have at least...
Are you blinking too much?
Yeah, which may mean that you're not getting enough sleep, which we have. Oh, we do track that. That's the other thing. This helps you sleep.
Dry eye.
This helps you sleep because you take the alligator clips and you clamp both of your eyelids closed at night.
There's money to be made.
You know what? This is the kind of thing that there is money to be made. Something stupid like that. People, you know, it's crazy. Couple of things. A new social experiment is being contemplated now in Switzerland. Seems that the Swiss government may want to be paying people $2,500 per month for doing nothing. I was thinking to myself, we have that, don't we?
Yeah. Well, not the way that Swiss want to do it.
Why?
They really want to do a classic reverse income tax kind of thing where ours thing is like you can't get that money if you go to get a job or anything. You just the money gets pulled off your money. But the Swiss thing, you get that everyone gets that money, I think.
Yeah, everybody just $2,500 a month.
Yeah,
I always
do that in Alaska. Alaska's got a deal like that.
But that's being threatened right now.
Yeah, well, that's the price of oil is threatening it.
Mm-hmm. A few more things before
the price of oil should be reasonably high enough that the Alaskans can still be making money. They're not; it's not fracking oil that they have.
Right. A couple other things I want to get to. A couple of stories before we hit on the stocks. Head of the, I think this is a reason to celebrate. The head of security for the U.S. Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, has been removed from his position, according to an internal TSA memo, because the agency was criticized for long lines at airport checkpoints, security checkpoints. The lines are getting longer and longer.
Yeah, this is a classic union slowdown. I don't know why people don't want to talk about it, but that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. GoPro today, the CEO appeared on TV discussing channel inventory reduction plans. Now, the stock was up 8 to 6% as he was talking about this. Meanwhile, the stock was up a little bit before that this morning. I was kind of wondering about what was going on with that. Then announced during the day that Red Bull...
this again? What stock was this?
GoPro.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Lost a GoPro. I had to go buy one from a guy at Craigslist last week. We went kind of down to some fishing and got some cool shots. But anyway, but there was an announcement also today that Red Bull, the drink, the energy drink, and you know, all the things they do with their various action, extreme
promotion
sports.
Maniacs. Yep. They're fantastic.
Yep, exactly. And GoPro are going to be entering into a strategic alliance. Not exactly sure what the story is, but Red Bull seemed to have poured some money into the company and got stock in the deal. So maybe, you know, Nick Whitman, is that his name? Whitman, right? Anyway, the CEO of
Whitman.
The CEO has always talked about GoPro being a media deal, you know, where they have channels and they have all sorts of media that.
Yeah, see, this is the mistake they're making.
Yeah. But now they may get it because GoPro has their own media deal. They have their own, like, channel. They have their own. So maybe they're going to be promoting the whole GoPro thing. Well, I'm not saying it's a good idea or bad idea. I'm just telling you what's going on today. I don't see much out of this.
No. GoPro is another good company that knows how to promote. I have to give them credit.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Volkswagen, real quick. It's going to be getting closer and closer to a settlement. Substantial compensation for owners of 482,000 polluting vehicles. An agreement in principle for buybacks and potential fixes was announced in April. But, of course, nothing's going on. Hmm. And finally, the U.S. dollar hits a 7-week high after the new home sales today. Good for some stocks, bad for others. We're still seeing some of the material start to come in. We're seeing a big rotation once again. What was good when the dollar was coming down is now bad as the dollar is going up, and that's going to be continuing to play out. So you have the companies like the Caterpillar and many of the companies that do a lot of exports, material companies, gold, although oil's bucking the trend. Definitely bucking the trend.
You think oil's going to hit 50?
Let's see. Where's
I mean, it jumped over 50 a little while ago.
49.25.
Yeah.
I think it was a 49.40.
This seems we'll see to be morning. An absolute plateau. It's very interesting.
We'll see
chart.
Tomorrow. We'll see tomorrow because we'll have the 10:30 inventories. Last week, the same thing happened where the Tuesday night inventories came out and oil moved higher. On Wednesday morning, we saw that inventories came out and were actually very much in the growing phase again. And there was a lot of excess inventories during the week. And then we had the Fed come out, which just blew out the dollar to the upside and oil just collapsed and came in. And then they're just buying it again. It's just, you know what? It's like anything else with this market these days. There's so much money just floating around that they're just buying everything, regardless of the fundamentals.
Yeah, well, where there's a buyer, there's a seller.
You know, that's the quote of the week.
Genius. Somebody's making money selling. Yeah. That's the way I see it.
All right, let's talk about some of the stocks. This is a game that we play, not an offer to buy or sell any security. We're not giving you recommendations either. If any of the stocks that are held by myself, John C. Dvorak, or Horowitz Company clients, we will duly note those. And, of course, we'll have this available for tracking on the DH Unplugged site. You can go over there and check out the closest to the pin. You can check out the old Codgers portfolio on a regular update with cool charts and cool graphics. And also the weekly stock picks, for which we only have a few left right now. I have a whole smattering of stocks to add.
Yes, I'm noticing this. I have none. No. I've looked at a couple, and I just decided I don't think so.
Well, let's see. We have C-Trip on there, which is doing pretty well, up 6.5% today, up 2.97% since we bought it, the earnings seasonality on the Chinese travel. We have Combo Matrix, which was some insiders buying it down or flat on. Bank of the Ozarks up about 3.67% with some more insiders. This week, quickly, because we're running out of time here. Of course, we have to put it inside because of the other shows that come before and after us, of course, right? We got to squeeze it right in there. Tesla Motors, I'm shorting.
Good for you.
I think I'm not sure if that was a pat on the back or a smack in the face.
I don't know either.
Tesla Motors, it was a fabulous piece out today about talking about how they are doing things in very much like a Ponzi scheme. I'm not saying
it looks like a Ponzi scheme to me.
Yeah, exactly. With the pre-orders and all that, and some of the things that probably going to happen with the Panasonic and the Gigafactory, and if they don't produce and pushing things back and all this stuff. Very interesting piece. So I thought it was worth the opportunity. Plus, there was that massive secondary that was put out for about $1.5 billion last week, which didn't move the actually moved the stock up a little bit. There's a triple bottom on the company called Express. This is a retailer which has just seen a straight move down over the last several months after many of these retailers are having a tremendous amount of difficulty.
Oh, yeah, I know Express. This is a good idea. I think this is a good winner.
If you just simply take a ruler or maybe something else on your screen and draw a line across the dailies going back about 2 years, it's more than a triple bottom. It's more like a quadruple bottom. Plus, on the weekly, there's some support there, too. Before we get to Reed, Smith & Wesson Holdings, I think it's possible that this will be an opportunity for into the election. As people panic, they buy guns. If there's concern over their
this is true
safety and all that, they buy guns. If there's a concern that
they have guns.
Right. And if there's a concern that they're not going to be allowed to buy guns, they're going to buy guns.
Right. Everything makes people buy guns.
Guns and guns and guns, right?
Which drives anyone that wasn't that's not raised as an American, drives them crazy. They just think we're nuts.
Right. And I think for the hell of it, for the show, I thought I'd add Reed's on there, which makes the kombucha.
Oh yeah, this is an investment I'd never make.
I'm gonna paint this with green, although we don't on the actual for our discussion because
it's a green investment.
Yeah,
but it's a hippy dippy green. Exactly. I mean, it's not really a green investment at all.
I'm gonna put it down as mine, as my pick, but it's just a stupid pick is my point.
Oh, I see. Okay,
so. It won't actually be colored.
It's not going to be my pick anytime soon.
Yeah, it's so I wouldn't make it the when we do picks that are both of ours, which we haven't done one of those in a while. They're usually purple. Yeah, so we have that all color coded on the sheet. You know, you could follow myself on Twitter, and that's Andrew Horowitz, John at the Real Dvorak. Of course, you can listen to John and Adam Curry and all their fascinating discussions about all the things that happen and get all those pithy quotes and great. Pieces of information that you hear nowhere else, but you could hear it on the No Agenda Show 2 times a week. You could tune in there. Just look for No Agenda Stream, and you can listen to the back ones, and you can listen to the current ones, and check out all the things that are going on there. DH Unplugged, of course, is also each and every week. You can check out all the things that are on there. And don't forget to listen to the Disciplined Investor podcast, which has some great guests. So we had a really good guest last week, and we had Frank Curzio on, who, I don't know if you know this, but Frank was the right-hand man for Did you see that that email I sent you about Jim Cramer?
Yeah.
That was good, huh?
That was a good one, yeah. Some guy really hates Jim Cramer.
It seems that way. There,
I was going to send him a note saying that Cramer, I think it's called Booyah Boy or something. There's some website that tracks his commentary, and it says that it's just after years and years and years. It's just you might as well use a dartboard.
Yeah.
But that's typical with a lot of...
it's entertainment.
Yeah, it's entertainment.
It's entertainment, not investment advice. Anyway, I will see you next week. Have a wonderful Memorial Day, and I will take some pictures of my my crawfish and send them on.
Oh, yeah, show them a big pile.
Yeah, I'll do that. And I'll try to tweet it and all that good stuff. And now that I'm on Snapchat and all this other stuff.
You're on kids, Snapchat?
My kids said, yeah, Dad, you got to be on Snapchat. I'm like, really? Okay. It's a cool platform from the aspect of what it does. I don't know the... utility of it.
Yeah. What does it do?
You take pictures and send them to people and you make funny faces.
Can't you do that with Instagram?
I don't think you can make these funny faces. They have a really cool program to make your face do all sorts of things and videotape it and send it. Very cool. They have stories and all that. I'm not sure that Instagram...
So all the kids are doing this? That's what's going on?
Oh, that's all they're doing. They're out of control.
Okay, well, I better get on the stick.
It's very cool.
I have to be hanging out with... I gotta be keeping up with the
Snapchat.
Kids.
I gotta tell you something. Every day I go look to see what kind of... You push the button and it kind of takes a kind of a map of your face, and then you kind of slide over the thing and it does an overlay of all sorts of like a Chewbacca. Really cool things.
Hmm.
Very funny.
All right.
All right. See you next week.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.